Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. It's Bill Holwick for Thursday at the Swag Cast. And yes, another new release. And tonight we're focusing on the horror anthology series, The Hermit's Cave. It was syndicated by WJR Detroit in the mid-30s and sponsored by Olga Cole after the first 2 years. As the wind howled, the ancient hermit narrated his horror fantasies from his cave. The cackling character of the hermit was played by John Kent, Charles Penman, Toby Grimmer, and Clock Ryder. Very cool names. And William Conrad, you may recognize him from Escape and some TV shows, produced when the show moved to KMPC Los Angeles with Mel Johnson as the Hermit from 1940 to 1942, followed by John Denner in 1942 to 1944. Hope you enjoy. We have a couple of selections from The Hermit, as well as our ongoing serials. Enjoy!
The Mummers. Little Theater of the Air. Now, the Hermit.
Murders, too. The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. Ah, have you heard the story, the mystery of the thing, King? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Dawn Forestier, beautiful wife of Dr. John Forestier.
Hectory! You two in Forestier case!
Sure, I saw the coat. It was Dawn Forestier's, that's for sure. Had her name stitched in it. Beautiful a piece of sable as a poor newspaper reporter ever looked upon. Yeah, and her other clothing was there, too. Underneath the coat.
Hextree! Think foul play at Forestier's head! Police hunt for body!
Well, read it aloud, Clara. It is believed that the beautiful Dawn Forestier has been murdered. This morning, several hours after Dr. Forestier reported his wife missing, Sexton Rolf Griggs of Green Cedar Cemetery found a bundle of clothing inside the cemetery gate, which has been identified as belonging to Mrs. Forestier.
Oh, golly. In the burial ground. Readers of the Gazette will recall the dramatic circumstances which have surrounded Dawn Forestier since early this year. She was discovered one morning in the spring wandering in the park near Lawnview Hospital by Dr. John Forestier.
Sure, I remember. Read all about it. She was a victim of
amnesia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that means you can't remember who you are or where you came from or anything. It tells all about it here in the Gazette.
The doctor took her to the hospital.
Yeah. And he named her Dawn.
Uh-huh. And fell in love with her and married her. They never discovered who she was. It says here, it was thought at the time the beautiful woman who later became the bride of Dr. Forestier might have attended a masked ball or came from the stage. But no such person was ever reported missing.
Sure. Don't you recall it, Clara? She was dressed in an old-fashioned gown, torn all to tatters.
Yeah, and now she's disappeared again, as mysterious-like as she came.
Oh, gee, isn't it awful. You know, Clara, I kind of got it figured out. I'll bet she was the ma of some gangster who spirited her away and murdered her. Gee, murdered. Probably cut into 100.
Gentlemen of the press, I have called you here to my home. Tell you that you need not continue your search for Mrs. Forestier.
What do you mean, Doctor? Not to continue the search.
Well, what's the dope, Dr. Forestier? Have you located her?
I think perhaps we have.
Well, where is she, Doctor?
Where'd you find her? Please.
What are you going to do?
Please, gentlemen. If you will kindly allow me to do the talking, or rather, if you will permit Mrs. Forestier to speak.
Then she is here in the house?
No. My wife will speak to you through a letter she left behind for me. I only discovered it this evening. For you see, she had placed it in a volume of verse from which I often read to her. Oddly enough, I had thought I would never want to open the sonnets from the Portuguese again. It was against my will that I turned to it this evening. Perhaps guided by Dawn. Who knows? Who can say? It was here I found her letter to me.
What is in the letter, Dr. Forestier?
I'm about to read it to you. There will be a few passages I will omit. They are personal messages meant only for my eyes. But here is the story of the disappearance of Dawn.
My darling John, this is going to be the most difficult and tragic hour of my life. For in this letter, I must say farewell to you, my devoted husband. The story I have to tell you, John, will be so strange and terrible that at first you won't believe it. But as you remember me, as you recall the circumstances of our meeting, how you found me dazed and wandering in the park one spring morning, how we've never known who I was or where I came from, then you will give more credence to my story. You named me Dawn because you found me at sunrise. Forestier, because you loved me. We met in the dawn, my darling. But I must creep away from you in the darkness of the night. Oh, John, how I've loved you. And yet how disturbed I've been since I've lived here with you. I've tried to keep it from you, but your analytical mind and keen eyes have often noted my condition. You've repeatedly said...
What is it, Dawn? What's wrong?
Why, nothing, darling. Why?
You know, dear, I often think it must have been during the night time that you were mistreated or abused by someone or something which brought about your amnesia.
Why, John?
Because it's always in the night time that you appear nervous, disturbed.
Oh, John, you're imagining things. It was not you, John, who was imagining things. It was I. At least at first I thought it was a product of my imagination. It happened for the first time a few days after we returned from our honeymoon and had come here to live. You had left my room. I had turned off the light by my bed, prepared to sleep. First, I thought I must be dreaming. From a distance, I heard a singing wind, like the opening strains of a melody played on an organ. Something quickened within me. I seemed to know the melody. I thought to myself, everything is going to come back to me. I shall know who I was before I became Dawn Forestier. I listened intently. And then as I was listening, my outer bedroom door seemed to light up. Yes, that's it, to light up. I sat up in bed. A street light shining through my window made the thing that materialized against my door very discernible. I could see that it was something phosphorescent. It glowed and shimmered in the half light. Then I could see that it was taking a shape and form. The form of a human being. For many seconds I looked upon it too frightened to speak. Finally I got out the words, "What are you?" There was no answer. When I spoke, it disappeared. In the morning I was convinced I'd dreamed it all. But the next night, the same thing occurred again. Once more I was aroused from a half sleep by the music of the wind. The second time, the glowing figure seemed to be closer. I spoke again. "Who are you?" This time the figure didn't vanish so quickly after I'd spoken. It lingered a few seconds and then faded away like a picture on a screen. This materialization occurred for 7 consecutive nights. It was then, John, that I asked a favor of you. Remember? John?
Yes, darling?
Would you think it too bold of me if I asked if we might go away for the weekend?
No, darling. I wish we could. I've noticed how nervous you've been the last few days.
I'm sorry, dear. I don't know what it is.
Don't let it distress you, Dawn. You're not entirely well, you know. Maybe some time before your nerves stop playing tricks on you.
You're so helpful to me, John.
I wish I might grant your request to go away for the weekend, but my work at present makes it impossible.
Oh, it's all right, dear. It was only a suggestion. I'm really all right, so long as I have you. You had said it would be a long time before my nerves stopped playing me tricks. Oh, this was something to cling to. It was silly of me to get upset. No human figure really materialized in my room. It was my nerves playing me tricks. But the visitation didn't stop, John. Hearing the singing wind, having that glowing, shimmering thing appear in my room was continuous. And then came the thing that struck terror in my heart. This night I had fallen asleep. Again, the music of the wind aroused me. I opened my eyes, and then I gasped in fright. For this time, the glowing figure was standing beside my bed, so near me I could reach out and touch it. Then something terrible happened. I found I couldn't breathe. Something was cutting off my breath. I struggled for air. And while I struggled, the thing near me began to make a strange sound. Then I sensed what was happening. The thing was somehow taking the breath from me, getting it into its own body. I must do something quickly. I sat up. I threw my arm out as if to push the thing away. I struggled to push it away. And as I touched it, I could feel something cold and gelatin-like. And then it disappeared. That was the night, John, that I screamed.
Darling, what is it? What in the world is it? Dawn, look at me. Tell me, what was it? A nightmare?
John. From then on, events transpired rapidly. You made an appointment for me with Dr. Bland, the eminent psychiatrist. Oh, I know, darling, you were upset because I refused to go to him. But I knew by then that it was no use. The thing was growing bolder all the time. Many nights it stood over me in my room, and without touching me, was yet able to take the breath from me and command it to enter its own body. As it did this, night after night, it became stronger, and I became weaker. You will recall vividly what occurred 2 weeks ago tonight. We were invited to the Westings for dinner, and we accepted. An hour before we were to leave, I sat at my dressing table, putting the last finishing touches to my makeup. It was only dusk outside. Never had the thing appeared, but in the nighttime, I was brushing my hair when I heard the melody of the wind. The figure stood right behind me. And John, I could see what it was. In the mirror, I could see what the thing was.
Can be the thing that haunts and torments the beautiful Dean Forester. The hermit who knows all the weird and terrible happenings on the earth. The hermit will tell you all before the night is done, yes.
And now, the hermit.
And now Dr. Forrester continues to read to a group of newsmen the letter his wife, Dawn Forrester, left for him before her strange disappearance. Listen to Dawn Forrester's story of the mystery of the thing.
This, John, is going to be the difficult part to make you believe that as the thing stood behind me at the dressing table, I could tell what it was. We didn't go to the Westings for dinner. Instead, you put me to bed.
I shouldn't have allowed you to accept, darling. You haven't been up to par for days. I'm going to call Ralph in to see you tomorrow. You don't look well, darling.
Don't call anyone in, dear. It'll do no good.
Nonsense, honey. There are very few things that medical science can't cure these days. And believe me, darling, I'm going to have you well again.
Your doctor friend came. He gave me medicine to take. Oh, I knew it was no use. No use at all. And yet I would do anything to humor you. For the thing that I now recognized was getting so strong that it was always near me. As I grew weaker, it grew stronger. And I wondered that you couldn't hear it breathing in my room. Now it had a power over me, a strong, compelling power. It was the master, I, almost a slave. Night before last, it exerted its will for the first time. It compelled me to rise from my bed. It was so strong now, it could actually make sound.
Come with me. Come with me.
As I rose from the bed, its phosphorescent glow seemed to envelop me. We moved toward the door, and it opened without the touch of a hand. We seemed to glide down the stairs, out of doors. The wind that touched my face was like the refrain I'd heard over and over again. We moved along the street, I and the thing. With great speed, we covered the streets and were soon on the outskirts of the city. I could see now the place which was our destination. Then I mastered all the willpower left me, for I understood clearly all the dark things I'd not known before. Oh, but John, there was you. I couldn't go to this place where the thing was taking me. I couldn't enter there without somehow leaving word for you. I struggled. I fought with my adversary. I was gaining. I broke away. Somehow I got breath and strength enough to return home and to my bed. Now comes the end of my story and my farewell to you.
Here, gentlemen, I will omit a page. It is personal.
But what happened to Dawn? Where is she?
Since this morning, when the sexton at Green Cedar Burial Ground found my wife's clothing, permission has been granted by the state for me to check up on the material found in this letter I've almost finished reading to you. I'm refraining from reading the last pages till we have made a visit to the cemetery. A few men of the press will get in your cars and follow me. We may be able to complete and verify the information given to me by Don Forestier.
Hello, Dr. Forestier. The men have nearly completed digging.
Thank you, Sexton. What goes on, Dr. Forestier? As you can see, these men are engaged in opening up a grave.
Oh, Doctor. You've come to the casket, Doctor.
Very well, Sexton. If you'll please open the box.
Yes, sir. Can you lift the casket out, boys?
Right. Now, gentlemen, after the box is opened, I will read the remainder of my wife's letter. Open it, please, Sexton. Great heaven.
Dr. Forestier, great Scott, why have you opened this grave?
Sexton, will you reach in and procure the diamond ring that lies in the coffin?
Yes. Here it is, sir.
This is my wife's ring, gentlemen.
How did it get in this coffin?
Here are the last pages of my wife's letter to me.
Now comes the end of my story and my farewell to you. John, I knew from the moment I saw the thing in the mirror of my dressing table. I knew from then on who and what it was. The first night I was strong enough to break away from it as it drew me to the gates of Green Cedar Cemetery. And I've spent my last day writing this letter to you. For tonight, the thing will appear again. And this time, I must follow it. I must follow it to the grave, John. Into the grave. I know how it will be. The thing, the protoplasm that has appeared before me so many nights and has grown in features and strength, will absorb me until I'm no longer a living person, and I must follow it. First, I will hear the music of the wind. Then the thing will appear, and I will be dissolved into it. John, my darling, in case you don't believe my story, open the grave near which you will find my discarded clothing. For I'm wearing the ring you gave me, my love. I'm wearing it as I return to the grave. For you see, John, the thing that I saw in the mirror, that which has gained power over me, is I, John. It is my own ghost. Come to claim me to return to the grave from which I broke away.
It is awful, Clara. Could anyone believe such a terrible thing could happen on this earth?
It's almost too horrible to talk about.
Yeah.
There, when they opened that grave, lay a decayed skeleton.
Oh.
Wearing the same satin gown that Dawn Forestier was wearing when she was found wandering in the park by Dr. Forestier.
And there was Dawn's ring inside the casket.
Yeah.
It says here in the Gazette that the inscription on the tombstone over that grave read, Lila Manton. And Lila Manton was a famous actress 85 years ago. She died one night very suddenly, just as she was to appear on the stage. Her cue to appear on stage was an organ playing. The music was written by the man, Lila Manton, was going to marry that night after the theater play was over. And the name of the man was David Forestier. He was a relative of Dr. John Forestier. But she died that night. The marriage never took place.
What do you think it means, Clara? Does it mean that Lila Manton returned from the spirit world to live out her life that was ended so suddenly?
Sure, I think so. But her ghost body made her come back to the grave. Well, that's how I got it figured out.
Yeah.
Don Forrester was haunted by her own ghost body until it finally absorbed a new vision and shape and made her return to her grave. Yes, turn on your light. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Omo,
Emma Peel had been given the job of looking after Lord Dessington. She arrived at the offices of the Capital Land and Development Company and got straight to the point.
Steve told me I have to stay with you all the time, Lord Dessington. Never let you out of my sight.
Really, dear lady? You think it's necessary?
Yes. Yes, I agree with Steve. Someone made an attempt upon your life and you escaped. It was a very narrow escape. They will try again.
Oh, come now, not necessarily. Of course, I appreciate the service, Mrs. Steele.
Apart from the assignment, Lord Dessington, Steve and I thought... Carry on. Act normal. Leave this to me. There's someone outside the door, and I'll attend to it right now.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Many women say, once an Omo user, always an Omo user, because there's just no dirt that can stand up to the cleaning power of Coldwater Omo. It solves Mrs. Sutherland's washing problems for her.
Very dirty oil or grease marks. Yes? If you use Coldwater Omo, there's no trouble at all. It comes out very, very easily indeed.
There's no washing problem too difficult for Coldwater Omo. Over 1 million South African housewives have proved it.
Walls Ice Cream presents the new Pink Pussycat song.
We've got strawberry and vanilla, top and half. That's on inside. White milky chocolate the way you like. All over the outside, we're Walls Pink Pussycat. Now.
Episode 5 of this story, in which John Steed takes a step forwards, Emma Peel one backwards, and Maxie Martin and Jolly Jenkins again crack. Stop me if you've heard this. With three murders, one attempted murder and one undiscovered murder they knew nothing about, John Steed and Emma Peel were not doing very well on this case. They knew that the whole board of the Capital Land and Development Company was threatened with destruction. They knew that a vaudeville artist, known on the boards as Nelly Maxie Martin, and his partner Jolly Jenkins, were possibly responsible for the crimes. But how and why was still a mystery. Steed and Mrs. Peel felt that their job was to protect the remaining members who could be in danger. Lord Dessington was an obvious target, one attempt having already been made on his life.
Shh! Wait! Miss Charles, isn't it?
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Quite thrown off my balance. Oh, I'm so sorry, Lord Dessington. I didn't mean to disturb you.
Eh? No. Come in, Miss Charles. Come in.
Miss Charles is in. I came to remind you, sir, that you are due at Farrington Hall today. You asked me to jog your memory.
Yes, so I did. Do you fancy a trip into the country?
Oh, yes. Yes, I think that sounds very attractive. You are going with Mrs. Peel?
Well, why not?
I'm sorry, sir. I apologize. After all, it has nothing to do with me.
You're right, sir.
I have apologized.
What is it, Miss Charles?
Don't you approve of my charming bodyguard? Mrs. Peel has agreed to look after me. You think it's a good idea?
It isn't for me to say, sir, is it?
No, it isn't. But now you've shown your disapproval, you might just as well continue your opinion.
Well, as you have asked, I hardly think that it is right for the company's image.
Do you think that another murder might help the company's image, Miss Charles?
I hardly think that the would-be killer will strike again so soon, particularly at Farrington Hall. However, Lord Dessington, I'm sure that the lady knows what she is doing.
Yes, yes, I'm sure that she does. Shall we go then, Mrs. Peel? Before the sparks fly.
While Mrs. Peel concentrated on her task of looking after Lord Dessington, John Steed was following up on the mysterious phone call he had from Bradley Marler, the variety gag writer. He'd called at Marler's office before to ask for information regarding Maxine Martin. Marler had promised to help trace him if it was at all possible. But the phone call had been desperate and garbled. Steed had got round there straight away to find...
stabbed. That's what he meant about the knife. Stabbed or... or is this a throwing knife? Yes, yes it is. A knife thrown into his chest. Knife throwing act? Again we have this theatricality. I must have dragged himself to the phone, dialed my number, blurted out the message, and then... then this... but he did say he'd written down the address where Maxine Martin is staying. Where in all this?
Steed looked around at the hopeless confusion of Marler's office. The whole place was knee-deep in papers, all scribbled on.
My wife is so changeable. A month ago I adored her. Today I can't stand the sight of her. A candle maker is one who works only on weekends. Oh, no. No wonder Maxine Martin gave it up if this is all he had to go on. Oh, well, somewhere amongst this lot is the clue I'm after. It's only a question of time.
And Mr. Punch addressed his audience once again with...
it's only a question of time. They're all going. Bradley Marler had taken his last curtain call.
Oh, well, we did our best, Mr. Punch.
And you know what our best is like. We knock him out.
We paralyze him.
We slay him.
Oh, not why. We thought we would have tried. We slayed him in the old Kent Row.
Very good, very good, very good. But now to business. You must both leave at once. It is essential that you both rectify your previous mistake. You know what I mean.
Lord Dessington?
Lord Dessington?
Lord Dessington. He must be killed. He must be killed. He must be killed. He must be killed.
Lord Dessington drove Mrs. Peel down into the country. He was in a particularly thoughtful mood.
A penny for them, Mrs. Peel.
Hmm? Oh, just going over things. Steve and I haven't done too well on this case, Lord Dessington.
Well, it's hardly your fault. The whole affair is quite bewildering. I mean, what the devil have we got to do with music halls and all that sort of rubbish?
Well, it's clear enough that your company has taken over lots of the old variety theatres and is in the process of pulling them down.
Even so, that's just a business transaction. Vaudeville is dead. There's no place for it. We can't blame us.
But somebody does.
Yes, but why?
I'm not sure. There's more to it than that. The Variety Act is just a cover-up. There's someone who's behind it all. It must be someone who knows about Project Cupid.
Eh? You think so?
I'm sure of it.
Or I don't see it myself.
Well, neither do I. That's the reason I'm trying to think it all out. How long has Miss Charles worked for you, Lord Dessington?
About 2 years.
Yes, I see. And all the information on Project Cupid is filed away in the offices of the Capital Land and Development Company?
Of course. I'll tell you quite frankly, Mrs. Peel, that I'm darn glad to get out of the place for a bit. I don't know why, but I feel safer in the country.
Well, I wouldn't be too sure about that, Lord Dessington. Are we here already?
Yes, yes, this is Farrington Hall. Or at least where it will be.
But it isn't even built.
No, not yet. But it's all planned. Like your opinion on it. As you see, it's all marked out with white tape. Every room. Do you understand builder's plan?
Well, I haven't exactly majored in the subject, but I think I can catch on. The house will face this way.
Yes, that's right. The windows will be here, facing the hill.
Remarkable view.
Mrs. Peel, you are standing in the fireplace.
Oh, so sorry. I think the place has possibilities, Lord Essington. But I'm...
Mrs. Peel stopped and looked keenly at a cluster of bushes.
What is it, Mrs. Peel?
I thought I saw something move down there in what will be your gardens. The bushes, they move.
Burnham Wood comes to Dunton, eh?
Well, something like that. Although it's unlucky, the quote from Macbeth, you know. We've had plenty of attention from the variety stages. Heaven help us if the classics catch up with us.
That was hardly likely, for down in the bushes, the two comedians were ready to start their act yet once again.
Ready, jolly old boy?
Ready, Maxie.
We've got to be good this time.
Yeah, sure. Now, just keep up the pace and don't gag through the laughs.
Do you think we're going to get any?
Sure. You laughs last and all that. Are you all set? One, two, one, two, three. You've got to
S-M-I-L-E.
From back in the marked-out foundations of Farrington Hall, Mrs. Peel and Lord Dessington were amazed to hear the sounds of a comedy song emanating from the bottom of the grounds. Lord Dessington was inclined to be amused. Mrs. Peel wasn't. She drew a revolver from her handbag, gave an order to Lord Dessington...
Stay here.
...and made off in the direction of the sound.
Here she comes. Now you take her on, Jolly. I'll do the dirty deed.
Sure.
Come here, me proud beauties!
Jolly legged it into the bushes. Mrs. Peel followed. But Merry Maxie Martin remained hidden. Then, when all the confusion appeared to have passed, he calmly walked up the slight slope and said to Lord Dessington,
"Oh, I'm very, very sad that you have to leave us, but when you gotta go, you gotta go."
Jim, kick your hands up!
Too bad. A bit of a tight squeeze, as the actress said to the bishop.
Maxie had his hands round Lord Dessington's throat. A short while later, Lord Dessington died. Mrs. Peel tore after Jolly Jenkins, but she didn't catch him. In a strange way, he seemed to know the undergrowth better than she did. He just vanished.
I missed him. How the devil did that happen? What a disappearing act as well.
Mrs. Peel returned to the marked-out patch of ground where Lord Dessington had planned to build Farrington Hall. He lay sprawled in the grass amongst the chalk marks.
Oh, no.
It was at that moment that Mrs. Peel heard the car taking off. She could have sworn that someone in the car was singing. Mrs. Peel made after the car. In Lord Dessington's Rolls Royce, she was able to make good time, catching up easily on the worn-out old jalopy driven by Maxie Martin. But he hadn't far to go. He turned into the entrance to Greasepaint Grange just ahead of her. It was at that precise moment that John Steed stopped wading through countless pages of script written by Bradley Marler.
Ah, got it. Gresham Grange, commonly known as Greasepaint Grange. Of course, the old-timers' rest home. That's where we'll find them.
You'll find tragedy unless you move more quickly, Steed. Get going.
Gosh, Mary, you're lucky to have such a hard-working servant. What do you mean? I haven't got a maid.
Well, how on earth do you manage to keep your floors so clean and shiny?
Ah, that's easy. I use Dual.
Dual?
Yes, Dual. The self-shining floor cleaner. It's so easy because Dual cleans and polishes in one go.
How do you mean?
Well, Dual lifts all the dirt out of the floor and dries for a bright, long-lasting shine. All by itself.
So when you use Dual, you don't have to worry about polishing?
No. Dual cleans and polishes in one go.
They say once an OMO user, always an OMO user. Here's Mrs. Senior of Umbogan Tweeny.
I've stuck to cold water, Irma, and I'm still using it. It's the strongest washing powder I've used.
There's no dirt or stains that can stand up to cold water OMO.
Mrs.
the Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.